all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
And it seems like Pat's just grabbing some coffee. He'll be right back.
Oh, or I could just sit down and hit that button on my microphone. There we go. Hey, welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio for this Friday, March 31st. Coming up later this hour, our usual Friday visit with author and media commentator Mark Jacob. We will also have our Friday guest sportscaster Dan Schumacher, who will talk about sports this weekend and also his upcoming switch away from serving as athletic director for the UW-Eau Claire Bluegolds. We are asking today, what's your main reason for voting next Tuesday? You can either give us a call here at the usual studio line numbers, or you can send us a note, radio@upnorthnewswi.com. Or if instead of listening on the radio, you're watching us as a live video feed on Facebook, either through Up North News or Civic Media or Bull Falls Radio in Wausau, go to that video feed post, leave a comment there, and if we see it, we might pop that up on screen here as well. We would love to hear from you about that. Coming up on UpNorthNewsWI.com, our website, is an article that I just posted there about what else is on the ballot besides the Supreme Court race. We'll review that in just a bit. But first, we want to note that it's an anniversary of sorts. It was 174 years ago today, March 31st, 1849, that Wisconsin's first governor, Nelson Dewey, signed into law a near total abortion ban. And so we sat down with State Senator Kelda Royce to talk about legislation introduced by Democrats that would restore the women's health care rights undone when the Supreme Court repealed Roe v. Wade, putting the 1849 ban back into effect. Here's our conversation with Senator Royce. Senator Kelda Royce joins us now. Senator, how are you?
I'm very happy to be with you, Pat.
Thank you. Happy to have you here as well. While I was on break, life went on throughout state government, and that included legislative Democrats introducing legislation that would restore the abortion rights that were stripped away by the right-wing justices on the U.S. Supreme Court last year. And so now we finally get a chance to visit with you. You're introducing this legislation along with Representative Lisa Subek. And so can you give us an overview of what this legislation is intended to do, what it would do if it were to pass?
Sure. The Restore Roe Act is very simple. It just intends to put Wisconsin women back in the same position we were in prior to the Dobbs decision. So the rights we had under Roe v. Wade, where abortion was, you know, quite frankly, heavily restricted in Wisconsin, but it was a legal right. And we do this by repealing the archaic 1849 language that was never removed from the statutes that bans virtually all abortion.
Now, in doing that, do you run the risk then of actually putting, what was it, a 1985 law back into place with certain restrictions? And is that necessarily a good or a bad thing, you know, as compared to the 1849 ban?
So abortion has been heavily regulated in the 50 years that we had Roe v. Wade. And right now, abortion is completely unavailable for women in Wisconsin. And that's because of this 1849 ban and the statutory confusion that it creates. Now, I personally believe that the 1849 ban is unconstitutional. I think it has clearly been repealed by these later attempts to regulate abortion. But right now with our bill, we're not trying to tackle every single abortion restriction. Obviously, I would like it to be more available and accessible to people. We're just trying to say we're going to restore the rights women had, you know, last June before they were taken away. And then we can move forward from there, making sure people can access health care.
You had a very public unveiling of this in terms of, you know, unanimity of the caucus. And I can say, as a former Democratic legislator myself, there are not a truckload of things where every Democrat under the dome will come together on an issue. This is decidedly one of them.
It sure is. We were very honored to have the governor, lieutenant governor, attorney general Josh Call, as well as the co-sponsorship of every single Democratic legislator in the Capitol. And I think it really shows a clear contrast between Democrats who are committed to restoring our freedoms and Republicans who actually want to make things even worse.
Can you talk about the purpose of introducing a bill like that? We know that the legislature has been controlled by Republicans for a dozen years. We know where they stand on all of these issues. And so folks that don't follow this closely would not be out of line to say, why even bother introducing this when Republicans are going to do absolutely nothing with it?
Well, part of our job as legislators is to represent what our constituents want and what the people of the state want. And it's very clear that Wisconsin is a pro-choice state. About two-thirds of Wisconsinites, like about two-thirds of Americans, want to see the rights that we had under Roe v. Wade protected and restored here in Wisconsin. And so I view it as very much my job to introduce that bill and make sure that their voice is heard. Even though Republicans are obviously hell-bent on further restricting our rights, you know, my mom is a social worker. She's a wonderful person, and she says, always leave the door open for them to do the right thing. So when we introduce a bill, we can ask for a hearing. They can still say no, but we are doing the right thing, and we're offering them the opportunity to do what the majority of Wisconsinites and their constituents actually want to do.
And we will continue our conversation with Senator Kelda Royce after we get a check on a very volatile Friday forecast with Jennifer Vachitsky, meteorologist for Weatherology. That's coming up in just a sec. First, a note that the Brewers dropped their season opener to the Cubs at Wrigley Field 4-0. They're off today, and then we'll be back in action against the Cubs on Saturday afternoon. And the Bucks lost to the Boston Celtics bigly, 140-99 last night. Coming up on Monday, author Dan Kaufman on his new piece in The New Yorker. He's the author of The Fall of Wisconsin. More with Senator Kelda Royce next. You're up north. So I mentioned on Monday we'll have Dan Kaufman. Check this out on Tuesday. Wisconsin's new Secretary of State, Sarah Godlewski, and former Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes will each be appearing. That'll be Tuesday, Election Day morning. A couple of big names urging people to remember to vote. Come Tuesday, Election Day, where hopefully the weather is going to be much more pleasant than what we are expecting for later today and into Saturday. And Jennifer Vachitsky from Weatherology is here to tell us more about it. Jennifer, good morning.
Good morning to you. Yeah, it's going to be an interesting forecast here, particularly for today and into early Saturday for much of the state. We're looking at chances for showers and thunderstorms for most today, with the exception of the northern parts of the state, Iron River, Ashland, over to Eagle River. There is a risk for severe weather for the southern half of the state, Wisconsin Rapids in a marginal risk, Oshkosh, Milwaukee in a slight risk, both Waukesha and Richland Center with a potential for a slight to an enhanced risk for severe weather, whether they are directly along that line, and then an enhanced risk for severe weather on Madison. So the main concerns with that, those will be the large hail and damaging winds. There could be a potential for a tornado here or there. So definitely something we'll keep you posted on as we get through the day today. Just above that severe weather risk in Wausau, even in Wisconsin Rapids, a winter storm watch will go into effect here in the overnight hours tonight. 3 to 7 inches of snowfall possible to accumulate around Wausau, 2 to 4 inches in Wisconsin Rapids. Each area with blowing snow possible, causing low visibility tonight and into the day tomorrow. Over in the western parts of the state, Amory and Baldwin looking at a winter storm warning going into effect tonight with a good chance for snow mixing with freezing rain to start. So very slick out, then becoming all snow with 4 to 8 inches possible to accumulate. Areas of blowing snow really picking up in these areas, so causing low visibility for the western parts as well. Above average for everyone today. As that warm front pushes through the area, then that cold front comes in directly behind the system for tomorrow. So cooler to start off the weekend for everyone. Chances for rain and snow mixing in the south. Chance for snow in the morning hours with blowing snow likely for the day in the central and western parts of the state, becoming mostly sunny and kind of a calmer day coming in. Then it looks like warmer weather for everyone on Sunday as another warm front pushes through. Quiet in the south with the chance for some rain around Baldwin and Amory over to central Wisconsin.
So yeah, the thing is that you could choose not to shovel all of this when it comes because the big warm-up comes, but don't get ahead of yourself. Be very careful with this situation that's going to be affecting much of the state. Jennifer, thank you very much. Have a great weekend.
Thanks to you.
All right. Let's continue our conversation now with Senator Kelda Royce. Can you talk about how you see things in Wisconsin since the Dobbs decision? We frequently have Dr. Kristen Lierley on as a guest, and she talks about the standpoint as somebody who now She is a provider, you know, outside of the state of Wisconsin most of the time. And she talks frequently about physician recruitment and retention. She talks about the health conditions of her own specific patients. From a lawmaker standpoint, can you talk about the impact that the Dobbs decision has had on your constituents and on people throughout the state of Wisconsin?
Absolutely. One of the biggest challenges that our state is facing right now, and it's a generational challenge, is how do we attract and retain great people in our state? We are losing population relative to other states. And I think it's pretty clear that one of the reasons why is that people are not seeing Wisconsin as a welcoming place, not as a growing and forward-looking place. And that's a real shame because I love the state and I want us to thrive. I want Wisconsin to be a place where everyone can thrive. But when you have young people, whether it's healthcare providers, whether it's potential entrepreneurs, whether it's young families or people just coming out of high school or college or the military, and they're sort of looking around and saying, boy, you know, the job market is great. I can go anywhere. Where am I going to go? Where am I going to put down roots? Where am I going to raise my family? They're going to do it in places where their rights and freedoms are respected. Places that are doing forward-looking policy like paid family leave, support for childcare, that have environmental protections, that are doing good things to support the citizens of their state. They're not going to want to go to states where, for instance, cannabis is still illegal, where abortion is being criminalized and further restricted, where LGBT rights are constantly under attack, right? Those are not things that are going to attract the best and brightest to be you know, putting down the roots in our state. And I view this as a really important, you know, certainly for the rights and dignity of people here in our state, but also important for our economy and for making sure we have a great workforce.
And really, that's where I wanted to go next is the economic aspect. And yes, there is a lot to be said about, you know, women having, you know, control over their own bodies and a lot of other issues at play. And people might want to think, well, why do you want to talk the economic aspect of it as well? Because that is also very much a part of this. When we talked to Representative Jody Emerson on Wednesday on the program, we talked a bit about paid family leave and how Governor Evers' budget proposal includes funding for business partnerships, businesses who want to do right by their employees and help them to find and afford childcare. And so really, I've said before, it appears that the tide is turning. It's Democrats who are much more the party of business, the businesses that want to be good to their employees and be good to their customers. And it really does not help with business recruitment and retention for those companies that want to have a workforce that they respect.
Absolutely. And, you know, this is an issue that's very personal to me. I'm a parent. I've got three young kids, and I'm also a small business owner. And, you know, I want Wisconsin to be a big, great place for my kids and for other families, but I also want it to be a great place for fellow entrepreneurs and small business owners. One of the biggest challenges we face is that workers can work anywhere now. And so we're competing for talent with, you know, not just people in our region, but all over the state and all over the country. And, you know, if workers can get a better deal, it's going to be very hard for Wisconsin businesses to compete against that. And if we want to have a healthy marketplace and make sure that our workers are getting the best deal and that we're then getting, you know, the tax revenues and all the benefits of having thriving businesses and workers, we need to make sure that we're competitive. And I think the governor's budget does that. It puts us in a competitive position. And I hope that Republicans will see the light on that, because I know they pride themselves on being the party of business. But I think, you know, Democrats actually have the receipts.
Exactly. We're talking to Senator Kelda Royce here on the issue of restoring women's health care rights, especially as they apply to abortion. And for folks who don't follow the issue closely, they may have heard rumblings that the Biden administration wants to try to protect access to what's known as medication abortion. But the fact of the matter is that 1849 law back on the books in Wisconsin is so extreme as to not really make that an option for women in Wisconsin. Is that correct?
Well, I think right now there's we're in a legal gray area, and that's part of what the Supreme Court has unleashed on us by throwing 50 years of precedent into the garbage, right? They have created a situation where now the most extreme anti-choice groups can press every single local government, every state government, every court in the country to try to get their extreme agenda across. And they're not going to be satisfied just with Roe being overturned. That was the beginning and not the end for them. They are going after birth control. They are going after fertility treatments. They have sought the death penalty for women who seek abortions in some states. So this is a movement that is just getting started, and they're starting to flex their political muscles. So I think we have to be really cognizant of that. That said, we're lucky that the Biden administration is taking some steps to make it less restrictive for people to obtain medication abortion. In my view, they don't go anywhere near far enough. Medication abortion is safe. It's highly effective. It's private. Anybody can get a medication abortion right now online from aidaccess.org. That's a wonderful nonprofit provider. It's a Dutch abortion rights advocate and physician who started Aid Access, and she has been shipping abortion pills to places where it's illegal or inaccessible for many years, and ships directly from the pharmacy. It takes a couple of weeks and costs about $100. So I think it's really important for people to know that that option exists, even in a state where abortion is otherwise unavailable. But secondly, it should be over the counter. I mean, the safety profile, the efficacy, it is safer than Tylenol. It's safer than Viagra. It's way safer than childbirth. And we should have medication abortion be readily available for anyone who needs it.
And again, for folks that don't follow closely, they may have heard Republicans say, well, we are actually open to modifying the 1849 abortion ban and providing those exceptions for rape and incest. I can't imagine that that is any actual compromise, and not one that actually would get anywhere past Governor Evers, much less have any support from legislative Democrats.
Yeah, it's also not real. I mean, you know, the Republicans basically held a stunt in the media. They're concerned about the Supreme Court race, and they're trying to manipulate the media into giving them a good headline to make it appear that Republicans are not as extreme. But even, you know, within hours of that press conference, other Republicans said, no, this bill is dead on arrival. It's not going anywhere. So it's clear that, you know, what is going somewhere are further restrictions on abortion. There are groups in Wisconsin right now that are pushing to remove the very, very narrow exception that already exists in the 1849 law for the life of the woman. But they think even that is too much, and they'd like to remove that life of the woman exception. So, you know, don't be fooled by the press antics. Look at what the Republicans are doing and saying, and that's trying to further restrict access to birth control, fertility, and abortion permanently in the state.
Senator Kelda Royce, thank you very much for the information. We appreciate it. We wish you all the best, and are very thankful for your leadership there in the Wisconsin legislature. Thank you. Senator Kelda Royce, again, joining us. We appreciate what they're trying to do to essentially be, I don't want to say a shadow government. I forget exactly how that term is used in the British government, but, you know, a minority in power can choose to twiddle their thumbs and say, well, we don't have the votes, and so there's not much we can do. And again, trust me, as somebody who's been there, there are people very content to do that, cash the paycheck and do as little as possible. Thankfully, that's the exception and not the rule. And what, in this case, Democrats should do, because they are the minority party this time around, and have been for some time, is to behave like the majority in terms of continuing to introduce legislation and trumpet it. Don't just introduce the bill and put out a press release and be done with it and say, well, we did our part. Here's what we would do if we were in power, is to get on the road, to get in front of microphones and cameras, and to let people know more about the details of what they have introduced. Yeah, it's not going to pass, but if what they're passing is in keeping with the majority view of Wisconsin voters, then all the more reason to put it out there. Because again, keep in mind, most of what Republicans are proposing is not in keeping with the majority of Wisconsinites. Whether we're talking about safe and legal access to abortion care, letting women control their own bodies, common sense gun safety measures, legalization of marijuana, the right to vote. In all of these cases, what Republicans are doing or not doing is not in the mainstream. They have power because they won a single election in 2010, rigged the maps at that point, and made it impossible for any other party, Democrats in this case, to catch them without a massive supermajority, which is tough in a state like Wisconsin that's divided 50-50. And so you have a group that can garner, you know, maybe 48% of the vote and still get 60% of the seats in the legislature. That needs to be fixed. And to do that, you need to fix the maps. And to do that, you need to vote on Tuesday and change the direction of the Wisconsin Supreme Court, so that the people who are introducing legislation more in keeping with your values have a chance to pass that legislation into law. Mark Jacob is standing by, and we will talk more about the headlines of the past week and media coverage of them next. You're up north. I will survive.
Keep on surviving. Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
Mark Jacob joins us now, former Chicago Tribune Metro editor, author, and he helps us each week take a look at the big stories of the week and how especially national media covered things, but we'll get into a little bit of Wisconsin and local media as well. Mark, how are you?
Doing great.
Well, this is certainly a landmark day in learning that former President Donald Trump is being indicted in at least one of these cases. And obviously, I'm pretty confident more indictments will come. So this isn't a big surprise. It is a mild surprise. We'll get into that in just a second. But the indictment itself is not a surprise. So how would you overall rate the coverage so far in terms of not just whatever you would consider mainstream press, but the folks on the left and the right in terms of either how much they are relishing it or how much there is wailing and gnashing of teeth?
Well, one of the things that really strikes me is how much talk there is about how little information. You know, it's you know, you had Trump saying, well, I'm going to be indicted on Tuesday or I'm going to be arrested on Tuesday. And that didn't happen because that was just kind of his attempt to raise money. But what you see is we don't know what the charges are. Nobody has seen a single word of the indictment. So there's a lot of talk over very few facts, but that doesn't stop from talking. I mean, that's been almost all they talk about. So you do have this situation where people are kind of taking leaps based on assumptions. And you know, for example, you know, look at all the Republicans, you know, nationwide who have just denounced the whole thing. You know, Pence going on CNN last night and calling it an outrage. You know, I mean, he doesn't even know what he's being outraged about necessarily. I mean, we think that it involves the Stormy Daniels hush money payments, which is not a crime. It's not a crime to pay hush money to your porn star girlfriend. It's not. It's but if you submit fraudulent business records based on that, that's a crime. And so people don't, I think, are not making that very clear. But I guess, Pat, I'd say that the thing that strikes me most is how much talk there is over so few facts.
Yeah. And again, to the extent that the New York Times and others, you know, were able to break the story based on things they've heard and learned, that's one thing. But the contents of the indictment is another thing altogether. In terms of the small surprise, again, I don't know if it was calculated or not, but, you know, we were all basically being led to believe nothing was going to happen this week. And then it was, maybe nothing will happen this month. Maybe somebody else is being compelled to testify. And then it kind of came out of thin air, the report that the indictment was ready and about to be filed. And again, forgive me for just engaging in parlor games, but I mean, do you think there was something strategic about that in terms of trying to throw the media and everybody else off the trail?
Oh yeah, well, I mean, whispering to the news media has always resulted in, you know, you getting kind of what you want as far as coverage. I think it was a head fake. I think they kind of wanted people to think, oh well, there's not going to be anything done in until the end of April. And then suddenly at some point in mid-afternoon they start seeing, you know, security barriers go up in front of, you know, in front of the DA's office. So I think it was a head fake. But you know, the thing is, you have so many members of the news media, you know, just going after every little tidbit that all you got to do is kind of whisper one way or another, and you'll get it. You'll see it on TV.
Let's just say a bit more about the stenography involved here, in that look, it's okay if somebody wants to provide a knee-jerk reaction. And if the knee-jerk reaction shows that they clearly haven't read the indictment, the case that you and I have made repeatedly, and I don't mind making it again, is don't just be that stenographer of saying, you know, that Republican Senator so-and-so says, but to put the context around it that they haven't seen the indictment. They don't really know what they're commenting about.
Right, right. You know, I saw, you know, Pence was on CNN for an extended period last night, you know, and I've read that that was kind of pre-scheduled before the indictment, but it certainly did serve as a attempt for him to be, you know, to defend Trump mildly, but at the same time seem as if he's a, you know, a different kind of character than Trump. And, you know, and you see this, I mean, Mike Pence enabled Trump for 4 years. Completely enabled him. And here he is on CNN, like arguing that, well, Biden needs to be tougher on Russia. He was a key person in the administration that was sucking up to Vladimir Putin for 4 years. What are you talking about? But you don't get any kind of pushback on that. Pretty much, Pat, I think that it is really an attempt. All right, let's get a comment from here. Let's get a comment from here. And it's all comments and it's no context. And the real tough thing about news media today is that if you do provide context, it's misinterpreted as being biased. You know, if you do what I just said, I mean, if you pointed out that Mike Pence was part of an administration that was embarrassingly pro-Russia for 4 years, you would, you know, that's, oh, you're being unfair to Mike Pence. No, you're actually providing factual context. I mean, do you remember Helsinki? I mean, so it becomes this thing where whenever the news media brings kind of value added to what's happening in the news, somebody's going to think that they're being biased.
Yeah, no, context in and of itself is not biased. And I want to, it's a very minor point, but as I'm looking at the New York Times editorial this morning about the indictment, I noticed a little banner at the bottom, and it's such a basic thing, and I wish it was on like every opinion piece. It says, the New York Times editorial board is made up of opinion journalists. It does not speak for the newsroom or the Times as a whole. And it's such a, you know, to us, that's editorial page 101. But as we also know, there's so many people that think editorial pages speak for the newsroom and guide the coverage. And I think a disclaimer like that is a good thing. I don't think you can put that up enough to remind people of the difference between, you know, opinion editorial versus news coverage.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. On the other hand, you know, it is the same news organization. So it's always, I mean, when I was a Metro editor at the Chicago Tribune, I mean, that was always a big problem for us because our political reporters would go to interview politicians and they'd be reminding us what the editorial said that morning. And we were trying to ignore the editorials. We didn't care what they wrote. They weren't, you know, we didn't want to talk to them. They didn't, you know, and that was the way it was. And so we were just doing our own thing. But it's just hard to get people to believe that. I don't think the politicians believe it. I think that they believe that it's all part of the same thing. And yeah. But yes, and opinion, as long as it's clearly labeled opinion, should be, we need more of it. We need people to be discussing the issues, but we also need to be understand that some people are just supposed to be, you know, reporting the facts and laying out the facts. And if you think that laying out the facts is biased, maybe you're biased.
And if you're going to engage in what, you know, what we now call point of view journalism, which is what we do at Courier Newsroom, it's what we do at Up North News. It's again to have that page of values in the About Us section of the website that says, look, we are still going to provide fact-based reporting, but here you should know where we come from on this, where we come from in terms of a set of values. And I don't see why any news organization wouldn't do that, starting first and foremost with we're for democracy. I mean, if you can't say our news coverage is rooted, how, you know, what good are you to us, you know?
Yeah. And the thing about it is that, I mean, there's this kind of false kind of pretense of objectivity that some news organizations try to have. I mean, I've come to the point where I believe, I don't really think that pure objectivity is possible for a news organization. When I was Metro editor at the Trib, I would send a reporter out to a story. Well, I wasn't sending a reporter out to every story. I was sending them out to just certain stories, which means I was making a value judgment from the get-go. And I think it's really important for news organizations to state their values and to be upfront about what they believe in. And, you know, and for example, democracy, or saying, as Courier does, for example, Up North News, you know, that you know, it's for more people being allowed to vote. You know, people, it's for democracy. It's for, you know, I mean, people being able to have health care in this country and things like that. I mean, it makes that clear. And if you don't like those values, you know, fine. But you know where people are coming from. It's when you have someone like I think the New York Times is this way in a bad way, where they try to act like, well, we're the only ones who are being fair here. We're the ones who, you know, everyone else is, you know, is partisan. We are not. And Pat, you do get some journalists who, and not many, I don't think, but you get some journalists who think that it's even wrong for news organizations to be pro-democracy. That they ought to be objective on the issue of fascism versus democracy. And that scares the hell out of me.
As well it should. And it does remind me, though, a bit of internal housekeeping that a couple of times on this radio program, I have gone to the Up North News About Us page, and I've read to the listeners, you know, our values, what are the values that shape our news coverage? And it just reminds me I need to do that again. And much like I talked about the clearly labeled New York Times editorial board, that's probably incumbent upon us, is to refer back to that from time to time. I want to ask about the willingness of so many in conservative media and Republicans to stand with Trump despite the mountain of evidence and conduct that's out there, and do it through the frame of somebody you're familiar with closer to home. And what's the difference between what happens with Donald Trump right now and what happened with former Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich back in 2008?
Well, what's the big difference? Well, the big difference was when Rod Blagojevich was charged with felonies for trying to sell a Senate seat, and also, you know, also putting the squeeze on a children's hospital to give donations to his campaign and stuff like that. Almost every Democrat in the state, he was a Democrat nominally, and he's not anymore, apparently. But he was a Democrat, and almost every Democrat in the state opposed him. They impeached him. They got rid of him. They took him out of office because it was an outrageous conduct. And it wasn't one of those things where the Democrat, and I'm not saying, you know, we're talking about Illinois Democrats, so I'm not like talking about a pure class of, you know, of pious people. We're talking about politicians. But they knew that this was outrageous conduct that the people would not tolerate, and they it was pretty obvious he was guilty of it, and they turned on him. And whereas what you see, you know, in the last 24 hours is Republicans saying, oh, they're saying almost the same thing. That's what's kind of scary, and you see this a lot where there's everything is, well, it's a Soros-backed prosecutor is saying, you know, and which to me is.
I was going to go to that next. If you want to explain George Soros and why he's such a boogeyman.
Well, you know, he's just a rich guy who's a liberal and who gives money to places. You know, there are a lot of, you know, rich Republicans who give money to Republican causes.
And by the way, to be, you know, fair disclosure, that includes Courier Newsroom. George Soros
why the public knows that? Because Courier Newsroom has decided to disclose its donors.
Right.
You know, and that's part of, you know, that's the thing. If you a news organization that has values and you disclose your donors and just say exactly where you're coming from, I don't see why that's a problem. I think that's really healthy for the conversation. But back to the kind of what I view as almost entirely lockstep Republican, well, this is terrible. This is outrage. This indictment we haven't read a word of is terrible. You know, it's silly. I mean, there's one exception, like Asa Hutchinson, former governor of Arkansas, is he came out with a real kind of careful statement that kind of said, well, you know, if the charge is serious, we should look at him and all that. I think he's like, that's the lane he's chosen if he's going to run for president, is he's going to be on the sensible lane, you know, that to kind of pull Republicans back from this kind of MAGA fascist craziness that we've seen for the last, you know, 7 or 8 years.
And but, yet, And yet, unfortunately, what it means is when somebody does speak out forcefully, a fellow Republican about Trump, it immediately goes into the frame of them maybe running for president. Right, right. They can't just speak out because it's the right and good thing to do, Mark.
You know, Pat, I mean, I was raised by Goldwater Republicans. My parents were, you know, and I understand Republicanism, but I don't. I honestly, if I was a Republican, you know, 7 or 8 years ago, I'd be an ex-Republican now. That's the thing that bothers me is these people who are just like clinging to the party. We're going to, Mitt Romney or whatever. We're going to reform the party. Well, I think the party has gone to the dark side so much.
Yeah. It does, and it's something we'll see if things change, you know, as this case moves along. Mark Jacob, thank you so much.
Talk to you later.
Have a great weekend. All right, Dan Schumacher's coming up next. You're up north. Grateful Dead superfan Dan Schumacher joins us, as always, on Friday mornings. What'd you choose for us today?
Going down the road feeling bad.
Going down the road feeling bad.
Going down the road feeling bad.
Man, it just sounds like the weather out there. You know, it's just going to get nasty later on.
Yeah, but it does. That forecast right there talked about 47 degrees. It ain't 47 degrees where we're at.
No. You were hearing the Madison station. Okay. That's what we hear is through Aaron's got the control of the audio board down there in Madison, and then all the stations across the Civic Media Network are playing a forecast tailored to them. And trust me, what folks are hearing in Amory right now ain't nothing like what they're hearing in Madison. And Richland Center is, you know, dodging thunderstorms or whatever. So yeah, we're gonna get one more.
Maybe the rain was horizontal last night, Pat. The rain was hitting my window hard last night.
Yeah. The wind is really gonna be something with all this as well. We're gonna talk about you going down the road in just a bit, but let's stick with the sports that we know of. And for folks who have been subjected to Dan Schumacher during Cubs season, you're in for quite a treat, because this Chicago lad is sending me texts with every game with a Cubs win, with that big annoying W flag that come
and fly
the W first this time, as the Brewers drop the season opener 4-0. They only managed 4 singles. That's quite a pitcher you got over there.
Yeah, I didn't see that coming. I really didn't see that coming. So I think it's still a rebuilding year for the Cubs.
Well, that's all they talked about, all the new faces. I mean, I couldn't tell you who Marcus Stroman is, and yet there he goes, 6 scoreless innings, you know. So
but I actually could is the Brewers roster any different than last year?
Oh, there are definitely some changes. Yes, you know, and that's great. I mean, you got
Batellas is there and Yelich is there. And,
but you got this rookie, you know, Bryce Terang, who got his first hit, one of only 4 singles the Brewers hit, and so, you know, I think there are more new faces on the Cubs this year, and that's where I would have liked to have seen a more dominant performance. But it was also a cold day; the wind was blowing in at Wrigley, and the Brewers have. They have not had great luck on opening day at Wrigley. They've dropped 2 in a row, and I think like 3 of their last 4 or something. I think it's time for us to go start the season someplace else. We got to get warmed up before we face you guys.
I'm actually surprised. I'm surprised that they let off at Wrigley when it's March 30th.
Yeah.
They should have let off at the Brewers to be with the roof.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. But no.
What do I know?
we just take what we get. They are off today, and then there is a Saturday afternoon game, a Sunday afternoon game at Wrigley, and then the Brewers' home opener is Monday afternoon against the New York Mets. 3 games against the Mets Monday afternoon, Tuesday night, and again Wednesday afternoon. Next Thursday is an off day, and then the St. Louis Cardinals come to Milwaukee for next week, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Meanwhile, the Milwaukee Bucks apparently took the night off. I don't know. I didn't watch the game. But when you get beat by 40 points, it tells you something's going on. The Celtics absolutely steamrolled them 140-99. And so the Boston wins the season series with the Bucks 2-1, which might come into play if they have a tied record at the end of the regular season. The Bucks next play Sunday night against the Philadelphia 76ers, and that game is in Milwaukee. So there's
some questions. 40 points is a lot for a pro game.
Yeah, and I don't have the summary in front of me, and I don't know how much of it. You got to remember, in the last game, the Bucks won something like, it was like 153 to 120. I mean, it's just been, they were a scoring machine the other day, and I guess all these things balance out in the end. All right, talking about going down the road, I'm laying on a beach last week, minding my own business, looking at my phone, and I see life-changing news for us, that one, Dan Schumacher has made the formal announcement of moving on as athletic director at UW-Eau Claire. Explain yourself, young man. What do you want to do with yourself?
Nothing to explain. Just it's been some soul searching and some things that I'm a little bit interested in on the side of the business. I've been doing the same thing for 30 years. So I'm going to be starting my own consulting business. Been one of six athletic directors in the history of the NCAA that has been an athletic director at all three divisions. So I feel I've been putting together a two-year business plan with that and ready to launch that. And then look at some new opportunities as well. And, if you look at my tenure at other places, it's been about the same amount before moving on. And right now I feel like that this is the right appropriate time. I'd say these last couple of years as being an athletic director has been, in the whole industry, has been really hard and stressful. Mm-hmm. Between COVID and different things and weather. The weather is completely different than it was 10 years ago, in my opinion. I mean, we're constantly rescheduling things. So I think some of the load to all that and contributed to just, making a decision, conscious decision to say, hey, let's use my expertise and use it in a different way to help some other people in a different way. And that's what I'm going to do.
I think that's pretty cool. I mean, people go in a couple of directions. It's either that direction or usually at like a major league level, they go right to the broadcast booth or something like that, which goodness
knows. Radio
is
part of that deal, Pat.
Good.
Pat, investigating those type of opportunities. I think a full-time sports talk radio, I think, would suit my strong suits on communication and a vast array of experiences in the sports world.
Watch me engage in tampering right here live on air. Hey, Dan, Civic Media Group is this close to starting a radio station in Eau Claire.
You might want to keep
your options open is all I'm saying.
My options are open and I'm looking forward to those options. I've had a wonderful life-changing experience at UW-Eau Claire and I'm thankful for it. We've accomplished a lot of great things.
I just heard managers at three other Eau Claire radio stations go, what? Wait, yeah. What? Take a number, guys. I'm talking to Dan first.
So. Right. No, I'm just, everybody, professors get a sabbatical, right?
Right.
Administrators don't get that opportunity. So this gives me a little time to reflect on some life changes for myself. And, it's all in a good place. And the intentions are good and everything's going to be, work out and at the same time, I'm not opposed to, as you said, bigger and better things. Getting back to Division I would be an opportunity. I would have to consider that. But right now is I'm going to focus on that consulting, some multimedia stuff and some of the stuff that I'm used to for the last 30 years.
And I'm just going to close by being very pro sabbatical. It's something we need to take back. You and I both know people who have started to retire. And then after like 6 months, they're itching to get back into doing something. We need to bring back that opportunity where you can take some time off before you move into the next thing, because if you're rushed into it, you may not make a great move. So clearly you've put thought into this, Dan. We're thankful you're sticking around here and hoping you're having a great weekend. I'll talk to you again very soon.
It's always a pleasure, Pat.
All right. Thank you, sir. Again, on Monday, we're going to have Dan Kaufman, author of The Fall of Wisconsin, talking about the Supreme Court race. Then on Election Day, we'll have Mandela Barnes and Sarah Godlewski. So have a great weekend. We'll see you back here again Monday morning. Thank you.